Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by education researcher Penny Sebring, educational consultant John Simmons, and Chicago Teachers Union President Marilyn Stewart. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to send us an email message, our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, tonight, for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about public education in the United States. And if you are a longtime listener or viewer of this program, you know that I've said many times that any dollar not spent on education, at least government dollar not spent on education, is sort of a diversion. So I'm pretty emphatic about that. So we can look at, and one of the things we'll talk about is the amount of money that is spent on education. A lot of people listening to this program think that it's a waste, that it is going down a rat hole, and that the end product of that money does not result in quality education. That's a general sense that many people have are listening throughout the country this evening. Tonight, around the table, we have over 100 years of experience looking into the subject of public education. So hopefully there will be some wisdom that you will hear in the next couple of hours. And again, we thank you very much for joining us. Penny Bender-Sebring joins us. Penny, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
You represent about 35 of those years looking into the subject of education. And let's begin at the beginning, at the top of the show, because there are many people think that public education is a waste and doesn't work anywhere. Tell us where in the United States, in your view, public education does the best job, and are there common denominators that they use that everyone else should replicate?
Well, thank you, Bruce. And I would say I probably can speak best about Chicago because that's where I've been doing my research for the last 20 years, 25 years. We have just released a study based on, and our question was, why was it over a period of years that about 100 schools, 100 elementary schools moved forward, and 100 elementary schools that started at about the same place actually stayed the same or got worse. And so that really motivated us to dig into this and understand what are the common factors that we can find that explain the differences. And so after doing this study, and we started in the 90s, and then we carried it through into up to 2005, we found that that the schools that made the gains, and these were significant learning gains. In other words, we were measuring not just average test scores, but how much each student learned over that period of time. And the ones that made the most gains had very strong leadership. They had.
We're going to go through that. I want to go through those points, but I want to get the other guests sort of engaged with the same question. John, you've spent over 40 years looking into the subject as well. Again, in your view, where does it work based on your knowledge of the field?
Bruce, it works basically where there's trust in the school building, where there are good relationships among the teachers, the parents, and the principals. And when they can develop that trust, they then begin to communicate, solve problems, and the scores begin to take off.
But there is no specific municipality that within the school community that says, boy, they really do it right in Cleveland, or boy, they really do it great in Oakland, whatever the case may be. I mean, you don't think there would be that sort of an agreement if the cameras were not rolling and the microphones were not on tonight, you wouldn't be able to say that.
There are neighborhoods in Chicago where the scores have taken off.
Okay,
that's
so
very
Let me broaden to you, Marilyn. You're the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. one of the largest teachers unions in the United States. My same question to you. Where do you think the best education is in the country?
Well, Chicago is like a microcosm of the state. And in back in October, they had the top 100 schools in the state, and Chicago had the top five positions in elementary school, middle school, and high school. We had the top six positions, and we had schools that were in the top 100 in the state all through that. So there are neighborhoods in Chicago and there are communities in Chicago where we are doing the right thing, and we need to replicate what's working.
Why is there a public perception that Chicago public schools don't work, and not exclusively public schools in Chicago, but there's a popular perception amongst many taxpayers that public education in this country does not work? Now, are they making that up? Do they not know anything? There's a disconnect between what you've just said.
Right. Well, bad news sells. If you talk about the politicians in Springfield, they all brag about their children going to public schools, unless for religious reasons. People send their children to public schools, and the research will support that public schools, if you take out the demographics, and the public schools will outperform private and parochial schools.
Do you agree with that? That public schools outperform private schools?
Some do.
Demographics.
So, yes, if you, it's always hard to compare schools because they serve different kinds of students. So it's, you may have one school outperforming another school, but it may be because those students in that school were more ready to come to school when they started. But I think you do find some public schools are doing better than private schools.
How should they be judged? What is a fair way to judge the success of a school?
I think there's really got to be multiple ways to judge. And the way we often judge is by looking at the test scores. I think it is good to look at the test scores, particularly how much a student is learning from one year to another. In other words, looking at growth. But I think it's also important to examine the kind of work the student is doing, the kind of behaviors that the student is learning, the habits of mind that the student is learning. So, I mean, we want our students to do very well cognitively, but we want them also to be good citizens. So I think all of those things are important.
And John, what's your answer to that question?
Well, there are multiple ways to measure. For example, one of the things we're finding is that employers really want students to be able to work together. Teams are a crucial way of organizing all kinds of businesses, all kinds of jobs around the world today. So if they don't get an opportunity in school to begin to talk with each other, if you walk into a classroom and see students grouped in tables, that's the beginning of learning very important interpersonal problem-solving skills. And those schools, in fact, do better than the others.
When we come back, I'm going to go back to Penny and lay out the essentials. There are some common denominators, some basic essentials that basically go into successful schools, at least those that Penny has looked into, and we'll put that on the public record and take your calls at 1-800-723-8029 tonight from coast to coast and border to border, talking about public education.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar Center, this is Cassandra.
Cassandra, I've been rear-ended. Please help me.
Okay.
He pushed me into the car in front.
Are you injured?
My neck is really sore, but I'm scared.
Okay, I'm here with you. I'm going to get 911 on the line for you, okay?
Okay.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
911.
This is OnStar Emergency. I have a woman who's been rear-ended. I'll conference you with the vehicle.
Are you injured?
My neck is sore. I'm scared, too.
Where's the other vehicle?
The vehicle that rear-ended me is behind me, but the guy that he pushed me into took off.
All right. We have the fire department and EMS en route, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Miss Cassandra here at OnStar. I'm still here with you.
Thank you.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
From Beverly Hills to Benton Harbor, Michigan, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight from coast to coast, from coast to coast and border to border. We should also mention that this year we will be celebrating the 30th anniversary of this program. It'll be coming up in late June. And believe it or not, if you grew up in the Chicagoland area, you once knew this program as Inside Politics on WBEZ. We switched it to 1995 to Beyond the Beltway, and we will celebrate our 30th year on the air. And next week, we will tell you a little bit more about how you can be, how you might want to participate in that 30th anniversary celebration. Before the break, we were talking with one of our guests, Penny Bender-Sebring. She is a school reform expert, and she has written a new book called The Essential Supports. And these are the, this is, in her view, sort of the common denominators that can be found in successful schools that she has looked into. And those basics include school leadership, parent and community ties, faculty capacity and professionalism, student-centered learning climate, and instructional guidance. Penny, take us through those points. Give us a brief thumbnail on each of those, and then I want to get further discussion of all of them.
Okay.
School leadership. What does that mean?
Okay. By a strong school, with the school leadership of a strong school, has a good principal leader who's focused on doing something about improving instruction and working with the faculty to do that. It's a principal who's strategic and is making coherent choices about how to move forward.
And if you don't have one of those, because I want to play a devil's advocate here. If you don't have one of those, is it easy to get rid of a bad principal?
Well, I don't think so necessarily. In Chicago, we have local school councils. And so,
explain to those around the country what a local school council is.
Right. Every since 1988, when the law was passed, and actually a couple years after that, every school in Chicago has it's kind of its own little school board, and there are two parent members, six community members, two teachers, and the principal that serve on the local school council. And Chicago is unique in the country in that it allows the local community and the representatives of on the council to evaluate a principal, to hire and fire a principal.
Maryland, is the concept of a local school council. It's been around a long time now.
I was on the first one, yes.
Has it been successful?
Well, in some aspects, it could be more successful, but there needed to be more teacher voice, because the only ones was basically the requirements. There was no real requirements for the people who were hiring the principals, and you only had two teachers elected to the local school council. And we always advocated that you needed more teacher voice in the choosing of the leader of a school.
It became an area for a lot of petty politics, did it not, John?
It has, but it's been surprising. People thought that the councils weren't going to work. They have. The research is very clear that the councils have made an enormous difference.
Where?
In terms of throughout the city, in school after school. There are only about 15%, according to the research, that where the councils really have not worked very well. So that's an important point. And I would also say that, building on what Penny was saying about leadership, I agree with all the dimensions that she's talked about, but there's one that's extremely important, which is the fact that the principal is able to share the leadership across the stakeholders in the building. That means the parents get involved, and the teachers get involved, and in the high schools also the students get involved.
Is there, and again, this may be part of the criticism, but again, since it's a concept that those around the country may not be familiar with, how many people are on the council?
There are 11 with the principal.
But you have, you basically have 10 members of that council who can hire a principal, and that principal then has rather significant power to hire and or move in and move out teachers, right? And to hold them accountable? Isn't that the concept?
Yes.
Yes.
And under the law, they have that opportunity. The teachers still retain their tenure.
But the concept is that these 10 people, again, from all parts of the community, allegedly were going to get together so that nobody could complain about that there wasn't some local involvement. Now, a question would be is, just because you get 10 people together whose children may go to a particular school, that does not mean that they necessarily have the skills to determine a good principal from a bad principal, a good teacher from a bad teacher.
That's right.
Am I correct?
It's like any private school that has its own private board of directors. When you elect somebody to one of those boards, it's the same situation. You don't know the quality they're going to have.
It's democracy taken to the school board, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work.
Yes, but most of the time it does work. This is what's so important. St. Paul, Minnesota accepted the idea over 10 years ago, and they doubled their test scores in 4 years, right through high school, when they applied the Chicago Local School Council model.
And
in Boston, the same thing happened with a group of schools there. So this is an idea in Edmonton, Canada, in 1973. It was many aspects of the model were adopted.
And it basically, from a political standpoint, it answered the political pressure from the public that said, we want more control. We want local control.
I think
so. The politicians basically, Marilyn, they just basically said, okay, you folks want it, we're going to give it to you.
Well, you know,
politically, isn't that what happened?
Well, yes, but where it works, it works beautifully. And if you find out a school that's struggling, those are schools that don't have intact local school councils, and you have a school where it's not working, you have schools where there's a high turnover of principals. There's a common denominator in all of these aspects. If it's a dysfunctional, if you have a dysfunctional local school council, it'll be a dysfunctional
school. So that leads to the second essential, which says parent and community ties.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of tied into the local school councils, is it not?
Absolutely, and the local school councils provide a mechanism for parents to get involved. And in that regard, that can be very good. So in our study, we found that the strong schools were schools where the teachers actually got to know the culture of the students and their families. They reached out to the parents to make them feel welcome, and the school reaches out to organizations in the community to get help with some of the students' issues.
This is why the councils are so important, because it creates that glue within the community, which is very difficult to create unless you've got a council that has the authority to help make that happen.
Now, let's go to the third point, because I think everybody listening understands that, you know, if you've got a good, engaged principal, and he or she hires good, engaged teachers, and the community is involved, you're on the road to success. Now let's get to some of the more debatable, more politically challenging things, and that is faculty capacity and professionalism. What do you mean by that?
Well, a school is only as good as the quality of the faculty that they have.
Right.
And they must provide ongoing experiences, ongoing professional development experiences, so the teachers can keep learning. There needs to be a sense of teamwork. You might say that education is a team sport, because it really requires the teachers, the principal, the parents to work together to move the school forward. And there needs to be a set of values and beliefs among the faculty that they're responsible for improvement and for change as well.
But if you have, again, you've got a faculty that's professional and really wants to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I've heard from teachers who I've known throughout much of my adult life, this is where they say things frequently fall back, because it is the teacher who takes the general brunt of public dissatisfaction. And really what the teacher should say, but again, they're politically astute and they can't say it, and that is, too many parents are sending kids to school that aren't prepared. They don't care about their kids' education. We are a dumping ground, and you're sending delinquents in many cases to school, and I got to teach these kids.
But you have to really realize that we're in a time where the parents, a lot of our parents are only 15 years older than their children. We're in a time in tough economic times where parents are either underemployed or not employed. A lot of our students are living in foster homes, being raised by grandparents and great grandparents, and the parents are missing for whatever reason. Some are incarcerated, some are deceased. So if you have all of those dynamics dealing with the student comes to the school with these social and emotional issues, that's that's a lot of information and a lot of issues that are on the teacher's plate. And it's not just, you know, blame the parent, blame the teacher. This is what we're living in. When unemployment goes up, domestic violence goes up. So our students are coming in with, you know, being neglected, abused, socially and emotionally and physically abused.
But again, if the criticism of a teacher might be the quality of teachers, the commitment from teachers isn't what it used to be, and that's we've all heard that. Isn't the counter argument to that is, you know, the quality of the students that are coming to see us isn't as good as it used to be. The parents that are sending those kids to school ain't what it used to be. The social fabric that was alive and well in the 1950s, we're not in the 1950s anymore.
Well,
parents are not together.
I'm a product of Chicago Public Schools. I came from a two-parent family, and my father worked at the steel mills, and my mother was a stay-at-home mother, and so she was available. But these are different times from when the time I started school, started teaching, until now. The parents got younger and younger, and the guardians were older and older for the students. So I think there's just a societal disconnect that we have to really appreciate that the teachers are getting students that we have to take the students in a public school. You have to take the students where they are, and we're not getting the support and the resources needed to meet these challenges that these students are presenting to us.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We got a couple of more points we're going to talk about. We've got a full board of lights. We'll bring them into the conversation when we roll on. Thanks very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've unlocked over 4.4 million vehicles.
OnStar Emergency, this is Edward.
Yeah, I need to unlock my doors.
Oh, I'll be happy to help you that up. All I need to do is verify your PIN number and we'll be on our way.
5808.
If you're locked out, an advisor can send a signal to unlock your doors.
Anybody trapped in the vehicle?
No. Just I'm on a first date, dude. If you could hurry up, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, your first date? Oh, wow.
Right? It's just with meat and bowling. How perfect is that?
Well, these things happen, that's for sure. And do you have a number I can reach on in case we get disconnected? I guess your cell phone's in the truck as well, isn't it?
There you go.
Okay. Well, your troubles are over. Do you see the doors unlocked there?
Yes. You're my hero. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Remote door unlock is standard on most Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
From Bakersfield, California to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. John Simmons is here. He is president of the Strategic Learning Initiatives. And in 50 words or less, what is that, John?
Yeah. Strategic learning works with schools that want to improve their performance, and we help them with coaching in the classrooms, with support for the principals, and then assistance for the parents so that they can learn the Illinois standards that their children are getting in the classrooms on a daily basis and provide them exercises at home.
Marilyn Stewart also joins us. She is president of the Chicago Teachers Union, one of the largest teachers unions in the United States. She is also a vice president of the American Federation of Teachers. And also joining us this evening is Penny Bender Sebring, and she is a founding co-director of the Consortium on Chicago School Research, and she's author of the new book called The Essential Supports for School Improvement. And we had gone through three of those points. I want to tick off points 4 and 5, let you elaborate on those. Student-centered learning climate. What does that mean?
Well, a school with a strong climate is a school where students feel safe, first of all, just absolutely basic. And it's a school where the children feel welcome, they feel comfortable, they feel challenged, they feel nurtured. So it's an environment where serious work can go on, and even though that sounds very intuitive and basic, we don't have it in all our schools.
Is it tied to the physical quality of the school, whether the walls are crumbling and the roof is leaking? Does it factor in some basic things of infrastructure?
I think that it's it can be demoralizing to children if they crumble, if you have a crumbling building.
Instructional guidance. That's a success.
Okay, that's...
Elaborate.
Right. So strong schools have an organized curriculum where the learning proceeds in more advanced ways from one grade to the next. There's a lot of coordination between grades and within grades. And it's a school where the demands that are made of students are not just to learn basic skills, but to go beyond that and do some serious intellectual work. So those are some of the key things.
Now, these are the essentials. Now, John, you actually have taken this plan, and your organization has worked with, 10 schools in the Chicago public school system actually implementing these plans?
Well, we've worked with more than 40 schools over the last 15 years. But what we do is we apply the essential supports that Penny's been talking about on a very practical way in the buildings, starting with the school leadership team who gets together and has a vote of the faculty, a vote, a secret vote, in order to decide they want to work with us. That's unusual in Chicago. Schools aren't given choices if they're on probation.
But what? Tell us what you specifically do. Mm-hmm. How do you, for instance, how do you improve parent and community ties? How do you do that?
We ask the parents what they'd like to learn about to help their kids and what they need. And they, on surveys, and repeatedly they tell us they want to help their kids with their homework. So then we identify what's the homework the kids are going to be getting, grade by grade, and working with the teachers and working with parent leaders who are often speaking the same language of the parents that come into the buildings. We then design lessons that the parents can use at home so that the parents first learn the Illinois standards, for example, author's purpose. What's the purpose of the author in this text that you're reading? And the parents learn that. They take home examples, exercises that the children use.
Because of what Marilyn said, that the age gap between the student and the parent is smaller than it was, let's say, when we were all going to school, what I'm hearing you say is you almost have to teach the parents as much as you're teaching the students.
It's important for the parents to understand what's happening. The more they can learn about what the children are learning, the better off. Private schools try and do the same thing. It's no different. It's trying to provide that kind of support.
Yeah. And we've done that in our Fresh Start schools. There was a concept of we have 10 schools. When Arnie Duncan said, we're going to turn around schools, that turnaround model, I said that you can turn around a school without closing them, giving the exact support that Penny just talked about and that John just talked about. And he's worked with the schools in these Fresh Start schools. We have 10 struggling schools, and we've created stability in those schools, and we've seen these schools turning in the right direction.
Let us go to Knoxville, Tennessee, where Michael is listening to us on WNOX. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. This has been a subject of concern to me for a long time, ever since I did a paper on this in college. All of you have basically understand what the problems are, but there's a dichotomy between the facts of those principles and applying them. We know that we need parent involvement with the children, but there's no time for those in the working class families. There's no time for them to be as diligent with their children's education, let alone with their lives. In the other communities, the average communities, it is hard enough getting the parent to even worry about whether their child is awake or eating rather than going to school and learning with them. The problem is not about money. My wife is a director of a private school that tuition per year is only $3,500. Yet we have one of the highest national average on a national standardized test around that has been certified. $3,500 a year, okay? The problem is basically on two issues. One, social engineering, where apparently in one generation the male gender has gotten dumber. You have less than 30% graduation out of high school, and maybe even less than that, 20% graduation out of college, where the female gender has gotten stupendously smarter. Well, you've got 60% college attendance among females in schools and only 40% The other issue is you have this curriculum. Now, the biggest difference, and I will be admit because either whether it was helping out in synagogue or in church now,
right.
The biggest difference between private schools and public schools are those schools that receive priority 7 vouchers where they could afford the $100,000 per class.
Okay.
Curricula.
Take a breath, Michael. I want to get John and everybody's response to that. The issue of vouchers would provide greater competition for schools, and the role that charter schools are playing in the landscape of American public education.
All right, what we find is that it doesn't depend on the type of school. It depends on the kinds of things that are happening in the building. If the buildings are applying the 5 essential supports, they get extraordinary results, like 12 times better results.
Do charter schools almost unanimously support these ideas, Penny?
Sorry, we haven't studied charter schools, so I can't really say.
Are charter schools a success?
Well, you know, the research does not bear that. You know, and I think the charter school is not a panacea for what we're dealing with. And people that say because you call a school a charter, and when I talk about the 100 schools the top 100 schools in the state of Illinois, not one charter school was on that list. And so you have to talk about, you know, this is not my battle against charter schools. That was a charter was a union concept. And it used to be like a lab school to try something new ideas. They were never meant to compete with public schools. You try something new, it's working, like in our Fresh Start schools, where we said we can turn around a school. Now we're using some ideas like instructional leader, team leadership teams. We're saying, oh, that works. So try it in your school. Try it in your school. It was never meant to compete against, schools where you have selective enrollment.
Let's go to Bonnie listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Well, thank you for taking my call. You know, you talk about, and this sort of upset me when Marilyn said in the beginning about, you know, like 5 students, 5 schools in Chicago that score real high. Well, first of all, they get to pick the cream of the crop of students. You have to have special test scores. Some of the parents know the political systems and the ins and outs into getting into those schools. You have sometimes lotteries. Where, you know, you could really get outstanding students. And my problem is that we have a 2-tiered educational system in the city where if you can get into one of those selective admission schools like Bell Grammar School, for example, you're in good. And if you can't, you can be screwed. And then if you go to one of these lower tiered schools, then you're dealing with all the discipline problems and the kids whose parents are on crack and, you know, I mean, it's just...
Bonnie, stay on the line. I want to get... Marilyn, tell us about this. Do you agree that there is a... more than one tier? I mean, there are some schools better than others.
No, the schools that are functioning in Chicago, and there are a lot of schools that are functioning that are not selective enrollment high school or elementary school or schools, period.
And what does that mean, selective?
Well,
you don't have to take everybody?
There's an enrollment test where you can test into the school. But my point is those schools are usually have a stable environment. I do think there is a 2-tiered system of education in Chicago because you should not compare schools that have selective enrollment and have a lot of stability or in affluent neighborhoods where the parents, students come to school more prepared than the schools that are challenged. You should not compare a school with all these challenges with another school. Other schools with challenges where they have a high percentage of special education, a high percentage of homelessness, a high percentage of faculty and administrative turnovers, you cannot do that.
But if you gave a parent a check, and they could send their student to any school that they chose, wouldn't that increase the likelihood that there were more schools out there offering better programs?
No, that's not
That's
true.
The question. I want to get your reaction to that when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency?
I've been in a car accident. It's serious. I'm afraid the car is going to go into the river.
All right, let me get the 911 center on the line. 911.
This is OnStar Emergency. I have a vehicle crash at River Road. I do have a 911 center on the line. Go right in.
I'm on the way. I'm right near the river. I'm hanging over it.
Yes, we have police and fire started.
I don't know if I should try to get out of the car.
We're on our way.
This is OnStar. I'll be right here on the line with you, okay? It's all right.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
The police are here now.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Thank you so much.
Ma'am, you're very welcome.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. John, you were going to make a point about the quality of the top tier schools and the secondary tier schools.
Yes, the essential supports say that it's important in the best schools to have these great teachers and principals. What we do is work with schools that have been failing for a number of years. They're low performing, and what we found is that those schools can learn. The principals and teachers can learn.
And who pays for your services?
The Chicago Public Schools does, and also some of the foundations in Chicago have been supporting us. But the public schools has picked up the majority of the expense.
Where do you come down on whether or not there should be a voucher system where every single parent could determine where they want to send their schools, and if that happened, schools would be more competitive and there would be a greater challenge to succeed.
I look at this from an economic perspective. What's the most efficient? It takes a long time for the voucher system to work through this, and it's only in theory. What we can do is work with a school for a year or two and actually turn around with the teachers and principals, help them turn around the test scores in 1 to 2 years. Now, that's a whole building.
Now, where specifically, I mean, you've mentioned that you've worked with 40 schools. What type of dramatic, or have they been dramatic changes in those schools? And if so, where are they?
Yes,
what are the schools?
They're right here. They're in Little Village. They're in Garfield Park, for example. There's a Willa Cather School. There's a Faraday School. There's Chilton, Cardenas in Little Village. They have dramatically turned around. The Finkel School as well. They were all on probation. They were about to be closed down or put on or reconstituted. And within 2 years, they have dramatically changed the results. Cather became the most improved school in the city out of 473 schools.
Let's go to Greg listening to us on WLS. You're on the air in Coast to Coast.
Yeah, I want to ask a question about things that happen outside the school.
Sure.
I've seen some cited research that says one big difference between success and failure has to do with summer break, and where more affluent communities have more opportunities for children. And I was wondering if your panel is familiar with that research and if it would spur a discussion about year-round school, if so.
Penny?
Yes, I am familiar with that research. And I should add that that at the University of Chicago, where our consortium is located, we also have an initiative to run four charter schools. We have the charter and we run four campuses. And one of the things that we work very hard at is to increase the time that students spend in school. So they actually are in school in the summer. And with the idea that we don't want to see them experience this summer loss. So I think the more we can get our students engaged in the summer, the better.
Is year-round school a good idea, Marilyn?
Well, the Chicago, there, more and more of our schools are becoming year-round, and the concept is not that they're never out. This is it's just that they break up that block of time during the summer. And research is, the Chicago Teachers Union has been supportive of year-round concept for over 20 years, in that if you use it correctly, and I always will advocate, you need to have a school that's air conditioned and conducive for learning. But if you use the intercession when the schools are out, the students who are falling behind could make that up long before they wait till the summer to catch up a year's learning, when they can catch it up after a couple of months.
Let's go to John in Southern Illinois. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce. Great panel, good topic. I think it's kind of emblematic to me, the problem, when in the first segment you asked the panel to come up with a school that's setting a standard, and nobody came up with anything. I think if you go ahead and, you know, the irony of teachers blaming parents, parents blaming teachers, when the whole culture, you know, three or four generations into this, just using Chicago, is symbiotic and self-perpetuating, is laughable. I mean, the easiest way to solve this is just, you know, a little algebra. X the number of students murdered every year. B the number that drop out, don't graduate. C the number that do graduate but can't do anything. Divide that by the number of teachers making over 80 grand a year, the number of administrators making over 75 grand a year, and the number of teachers drawing tenured pensions that aren't adding anything to the system. Do a cost-benefit analysis to see how much we're spending to ruin the lives of the children, and then go from there.
John.
So we have a new way of looking at the cost-benefit analysis. If you look at the work that Strategic Learning Initiatives has been doing in Chicago the last 20 years, and especially the last 5 years, you'll find that it's possible to take those very teachers and principals I think you're talking about and help them achieve what they would like to achieve for their students. And it's amazing that they can actually turn around their schools when they have the right support over a period of time.
Are you getting cooperation from the Chicago Public School System, from the structure?
It's terrific support. Yes, they've been backing this program. They were the ones who wanted us to, who came to us and said, we would like to have you expand your model in Chicago. And that's what we've been doing.
And your assessment of the work that they're doing, Marilyn?
I think it's on target. I think we with all of the turnover at the district level, I think we have to create stability at the district level, so the good work that they're doing can be carried out in more of our schools.
Marilyn Stewart, she is president of the Chicago Teachers Union. She's joined us in hour number one. Marilyn, thank you very much for being with us. Also. In the classroom for many, many years prior to your union involvement as well, working with special education children for over 15 years, 20 years, right?
No, almost 30 years.
30 years, okay. Well, you must have lied about your age. Also joining us this evening, we've had Penny Bender Sebring, and she is with the Consortium on Chicago School Research, and John Simmons is here. He is the president of Strategic Learning Initiatives. We're going to continue our discussion of public education, and also we're going to reach out and hear from someone who has had some success out in Oakland, also known generally as a troubled public school system. He's done some things out there that warrant some national exposure, and we'll give it to him when we continue. I'm Bruce Dumont. If you're watching us on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we will be back in about 10 minutes.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency?
I've been in a car accident. It's serious. I'm afraid the car is going to go into the river.
All right, let me get the 911 center on the line.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a vehicle crash at River Road. I do have a 911 center on the line. Go right in.
I'm on the way. I'm right near the river. I'm hanging over it.
Yes, we have police and fire started.
I don't know if I should try to get out of the car.
We're on our way.
This is OnStar. I'll be right here on the line with you, okay? It's all right.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
The police are here now.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Thank you so much.
Ma'am, you're very welcome.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
The moment you realize clowns are kind of creepy. The moment you actually saw what your favorite radio DJ looked like. The moment your printer first ran out of ink. Heart-wrenching moments of truth. Don't let your printer run out of ink again. With the largest retail selection of ink and toner, Office Max has your ink. Get a $10 Office Max gift card when you buy $40 of national branded ink. Office Max. Work with us. Valid May 2nd through May 29th. Offer excludes Office Max private branded ink. Offer valid in store only. See store for details.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess, just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar Center, this is Cassandra.
Cassandra, I've been rear-ended. Please help me.
Okay.
He pushed me into the car in front.
Are you injured?
My neck is really sore, and I'm scared.
Okay, I'm here with you. I'm going to get 911 on the line for you, okay?
Okay.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
911.
This is OnStar Emergency. I have a woman who's been rear-ended. I'll conference you with the vehicle.
Are you injured?
My neck is sore. I'm scared, too.
Where's the other vehicle?
The vehicle that rear-ended me is behind me, but the guy that he pushed me into took off.
All right. We have the fire department and EMS en route, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Miss Cassandra here at OnStar. I'm still here with you.
Thank you.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Tonight featuring commentary by education researcher Penny Sebring, education consultant John Simons, and Chicago Teachers Union activist Deborah Lynch. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with a California education reformer, Steve Jubb, from Oakland, California. Our program tonight coming to you from our studios at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And we've been talking about some of the changes in public schools, public education. And during the break, I was talking about, the good old days in the 1950s as I remember school, and as I also remember that society was significantly different. There were more marriages together. There was less violence in the street. There was less teenage pregnancy. Those are my memories of what my growing up years were, and we're talking about the late 1950s. And you were making a point during the break, Penny Bender Sebring from the University of Chicago and the Consortium on Chicago School Research, and you were basically saying that there really isn't that much difference between the high school dropout rate now and then.
Well, what I was saying was that when you look back to the 1950s, the national graduation rate was something like 55 or 60%. Today, that is more like 70%. Still not where we want it to be, but people have, when they look back, they think things were better, I think, than they really were. You also have to remember that we're talking a lot about the Chicago public schools, and so the statistics are somewhat different for Chicago. Graduation rate has actually been going up in Chicago over the last 10 years. It's in somewhere near 57-58% now. Still way too low, but not that different than the national situation was in the 1950s.
Deborah Lynch also joins you. She is a teachers' union activist, and she was once upon a time the president of the Chicago Teachers' Union, and in an upcoming election, she'd like to get her job back. She's also a high school teacher of English in the public school system as we speak. The frustration, as we were talking about in hour number one, was really the frustration of the public, the people who pay taxes, the parents, the frustration that the teachers have. Describe the frustration as you see it from the frustration of the teacher and the frustration of the parents that you engage with.
Okay, well, you talked about a two-tier system before, and I think we really have two separate public school systems in America. And it's a school system for middle-class and more advantaged kids and a school system that most of our urban centers are facing with high levels of poverty. And really, the public perception of our public schools, we don't see the outcry for the vouchers and the charters in more affluent areas, in the suburban areas. It's demands by people who don't know the trenches that are calling for charters and vouchers as an answer to their frustration with the public schools. When in fact, study after study after study, whether it's charter school studies, voucher school studies, when public schools, traditional public schools, are compared by socioeconomic status, we do just as well or better in the urban areas. And so our frustration is that urban teachers, teachers that teach in high-poverty schools, get stigmatized, get castigated, get blamed for the problems in our schools, when in fact, when compared fairly, we do as well or better as anybody else, despite the fact that in most cases, we don't have the same kind of resources. That's the frustration.
And what is the, what in your view, because again, most taxpayers, of course, most taxpayers think they pay too much for everything, but they like to zero in on education, and they say that money that's going to public education is a cesspool because the test scores are not what they should be. They don't necessarily say what that is, but they will say that, and they also will talk about the dropout rate, and they'll say, why are we continuing to invest money into a system that does not work? How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond to that by pointing to some of the situations in these schools. I reject the fact that the schools are failing. I reject the fact that the teachers and staff in those schools are failing. One of the schools that got closed this year in the Chicago Public Schools was Bradwell Elementary School, 74% mobility rate. And yet, our Board of Education turned that school around by displacing all the staff, including the lunchroom ladies and the engineers, blaming them for the crime of devoting their professional careers to a high-poverty school with incredibly tough situations. Our urban centers, Chicago, for example, 86% poverty rates. Our kids arrive in preschool and kindergarten way behind their more advantaged counterparts. The fact of the matter is poor kids cost more to educate. They can learn, but we've got to get serious, and it's not targeting vouchers to a handful of kids. It's doing what is really necessary to help them.
John Simmons is with us. He is with the Strategic Learning Initiative. He's been with us in hour number one. When you look at the schools, and you basically, for those who tuned in and didn't hear the first hour, you basically say that your program basically could work in any school if the principles, the essential principles, as described in hour number one, were just implemented. And it isn't necessarily an issue of money, or did I miss that? What role does money have in this, John?
It's significant in that the schools need some additional resources to bring in some additional help to jumpstart their change process. And the teachers' union has been very important in following that kind of principle. But what we have found is
where would that money be spent?
It's spent on helping train the teachers in skills that they would like to have that they don't have. It's spent in coaching principals who would like to improve their skills. It's working with the parents to help their children with their homework, to learn the Illinois standards and be able to help the children with homework that's related to author's purpose and other things that come home right.
So it's professionalizing the teachers.
Yes,
and professionalizing, and that professionalization costs money. It costs money to train the teacher, and then is it also safe to assume that once you have greater skill, you will want to be paid more?
Not necessarily. There are regulations from the contract that determine that. All we're saying is that the schools need some additional support to jumpstart the change process. The schools we've been working with have turned around dramatically in a period of 1 or 2 years where they were flat in their scores. They were on the list to be closed or reconstituted. And they said, look, we'd like to understand your program. We'd like to work with you. And we'd say, fine, you need to get a vote of the teachers, 80%. to join the program. You need to have the school leadership team say this is a good idea. Then we'll talk to you.
If what you say is, and you said you, in hour number one, you said you worked with about 40 schools. If you've had success, I don't know whether you've had success in all 40 schools. I want to get a report card on that when we come back. But of the schools where you have had success, I want to find out why has that not led to scores more schools asking for your help. Mm-hmm. We'll do that when we come back. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We've got lots of callers on the line. I promise we will bring them into the conversation when we come back.
The moment you realize clowns are kind of creepy. The moment you actually saw what your favorite radio DJ looked like. The moment your printer first ran out of ink. Heart-wrenching moments of truth. Don't let your printer run out of ink again. With the largest retail selection of ink and toner, Office Max has your ink. Get a $10 Office Max gift card when you buy $40 of national branded ink. Office Max. Work with us. Valid May 2nd through May 29th. Offer excludes Office Max private branded ink. Offer valid in-store only. See store for details.
Guys, discomfort and chafing from wetness-related friction can hit any time. Get relief and prevent it too with Gold Bond Medicated Foot Powder for your feet and body powder for your, you know. Whether you're working out or just holding down the couch, you're a guy. And unlike baby powders, Gold Bond's got the medicated formulas to fight itch, odor, and wetness. Plus, it's got that cooling kick that lets you know it's working wherever. Keep it cool with Gold Bond Medicated Foot and Body Powders. It's a guy thing. Use as directed.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to Goren, listening to us on line one on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air, Goren.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Just wanted to let you guys know that I have just recently been elected to the local school council over at a Northwest Side high school in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And we were blessed enough to have a 21-year incumbent serve as the community representative. But just being out there on report card pickup day, I realized that a lot of parents really, unfortunately, don't care about the council or the school. They walk in, they grab their report cards, they leave upset, they leave, you know, at their children for getting maybe a bad grade, but they don't do anything to step it up a notch and try to help their child progress. And it's very unfortunate.
Reaction from anybody on the panel to that?
Yeah, I'll say something about that. And that is that we know that that many of the parents who have children in the Chicago Public Schools have had negative experiences themselves in school. And so it really is incumbent upon the school to do everything they can to reach out and make those parents feel welcome and to provide some guidance for them on how they can support their student. So this is...
But isn't the challenge, I mean, just to bring it to a head here, isn't the challenge that there's just too many irresponsible parents? I think this caller is talking about irresponsible parents who don't know the job of parenting. You're disagreeing with
that. That's
John.
Not the problem. It's not
That's not a problem? I'm stunned that I've heard you say that.
Well, when we approach parents, it's clear that 99% really want to get the best for their child. They may not know exactly how to interact with the school, how to approach the teachers. There's also often very little time for them to do it in the way the school day is structured, and it doesn't fit often into their work routines. There's not the flexibility. So there's a systemic problem. If the parents can't come into the buildings and see their teachers on a regular basis, it's very hard for them to get anything but totally frustrated. So in the better schools, the principals work out a system where that can happen.
Such as? Give us an example of how they
work. Chicago Vocational High School, for example, when it was operating under Betty Dispenza Green, decided that they would pull the teachers in at noon and later in the afternoon, and 1 or 2 o'clock, and then have the parents come right into the deep of the evening so that there were time that fit the parents' schedules.
And the parents showed up.
And the parents showed up.
The majority of the parents showed up.
And the test scores went way up in that in Chicago Vocational High School, and it became a nationally ranked school.
You're creating, and I want to go back to the question they asked before, you're creating an impression for those listening around the country that in the schools that where you've worked, everything is just hunky-dory. It's just working perfectly. So my question to you before the break is, why isn't every school using your system?
Well, there are two basic reasons. One is that right now, as you know, there's no money. There's no money even to pay the teachers, let alone have anything extra. So that hit us about 2 years ago when we were given a contract to double the number of schools we had in the Chicago Public School System. And we then got a call 6 months later saying we're going to have to use that money for something else.
And how long have you been doing this?
Well, it's been 20 years in Chicago.
20 years in Chicago. During that tenure, Arnie Duncan was the head of the public education system in Chicago. He's now the head of the U.S. Department of Education. Why is he not taking your program and said, let's put federal money behind it and let's put it at every school in America? I mean, you're talking about a very successful program. I think the people are somewhat startled that you're suggesting that the level of responsible parents is as high as you apparently have just suggested exists. I don't think most people would agree with that, although
they need to come in and talk to these parents and actually visit with them and understand what they're...
But why wouldn't Artie Duncan and President Obama, if your system is working as beautifully as you say it is, why would they not embrace your program and have it at every public school in America?
There are a number of other programs that are out there. Second, the...
But yours works. You say yours works.
Absolutely, and it's been validated.
And does Arnie Duncan know that it works?
He does know it works, and he's been in the buildings.
How come he hasn't done it then, your view?
Because he doesn't have the authority to simply pick up and give us money. There's a system set up for distributing money. We're applying for it. So there's a routine, and we're in line, hopefully, to get some.
Penny?
Bruce, I think also what happens is that there's a tendency of people just to look at one policy idea at a time. So in the 1990s, people were concerned about school leadership. In the early 2000s, it was about instruction. Let's focus on instruction. And as the charter school movement got going, there was more interest in the student climate. And so the KIPP schools, for example, have this motto, work hard, be nice. And the point is that all of these things need to be done. And I think it's a hard thing it's a daunting task to work on all of these things together. And that's what our research is suggesting. Actually, Arnie Duncan, speechmaker, called the day that our book was covered in Education Week, Arnie Duncan's speechmaker called and ordered two copies of the book. So he does have the book. And so I think it's just hard to get people's minds around the whole process.
Well, I think my frustration would be, and I think it's part of the frustration that a lot of people have with government in general, is you've described a system where, you know, the head of education for the country, granted education is a local concern, but he certainly has the pulpit. He certainly has the ear of someone who, the president, who knows of your organizations, I'm sure. And, I mean, if they can't get it done with that clout in place, your system isn't going to get implemented.
Well, I say that they're working through the system. They're using the mechanisms available to distribute the federal money. They have a competitive system set up to do that. They're beginning now to make some of these grants. We'll see who gets the money.
But Arnie Duncan really wouldn't recognize a good program if he saw it. He's never taught in the classroom. He has no education credentials. And he went to Washington on the myth that we had a Chicago reform miracle here under Mayor Daley. That did not happen. Our high school graduation rates have not increased. And we have done nothing but destroy our schools under Renaissance 2010, which is the Chicago miracle by which he got to Washington, D.C.
Now, Betty was saying that the graduation rates are going up.
They're stagnated, and they have been stagnated in the 15 years since Mayor Daley took over here, in the low 50s.
I disagree. We've looked at these graduation rates, and they're going up slowly, but they have been going up for about the last 10 years.
Slowly is not fast enough.
Yeah,
if this country is going to be competitive internationally,
right,
we must jumpstart these schools so that they get the kinds of results that our schools have been getting, and then they can go on.
But from a
classroom teacher and someone that wants to be a union president, and once upon a time was a union president, our guest in the first hour defeated you, and now you're running to get your job back.
Right.
I mean, you're basically saying that even if you've got friends in high places, the ears of at least two of those four ears don't know what they're doing.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I reject John's notion that outsiders can come in and tell our teachers how to change things. We've got the most educated teacher workforce in history, and our teachers should be seen as professionals, should be treated as professionals, and should have reform done with them, not to them. And that has been the Mayor Daley model, the Paul Vallis, the Arne Duncan model, was outside experts knew better. It was the teachers that were the problem. It was the union that was the problem. And I taught at an elementary school where we had one of the three highest nationally recognized school-wide reform models in place because the teachers wanted it. We didn't bump into any union contractual rules. The fact of the matter is, it boils down to class size, teacher quality, and what you're doing with those kids, the quality of your curriculum and the quality of discipline in the schools.
You've been around a long
period.
Time in the union movement, and also been teaching in the schools.
Yes.
And something we briefly touched on in the first hour, we certainly discussed it during the break between the 2 hours, and that is there is not a history, at least in the state of Illinois, of having elected officials with experience and a tradition of graduation from a public high school, and that may be one of the reasons why that some of the political leadership in the state and city, because they went to parochial schools, frankly, they may talk a good game about doing something for the public education. They really don't care that much about it.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if they really cared about the poor kids in our urban centers, they would cough up the money. For $1,900 per kid per year, our kids could have 12 months of kindergarten, a better start. For $400 a year, the teachers in our schools could have a research-based instructional program that is proven to work with kids that are underachieving. For $870 a year, we could lower their class sizes. Class size, everybody says, oh, don't throw more money at the problem. But the fact is that class sizes help disadvantaged kids the most.
And how much would you need, again, for those listening around the country, you're not necessarily aware of the startling statistics, but the number of Chicago public high school students that have been shot and killed in this city this year is a disgrace. It's a national disgrace. I want to talk about safety in the schools, because before you can teach a student, they should at least have some level of comfort that they're not going to get whacked when they walk outside school that day. Back shortly from Chicago with calls. 1-800-723-8289.
The moment you realize clowns are kind of creepy. The moment you actually saw what your favorite radio DJ looked like. The moment your printer first ran out of ink. Heart-wrenching moments of truth. Don't let your printer run out of ink again. With the largest retail selection of ink and toner, Office Max has your ink. Get a $10 Office Max gift card when you buy $40 of national branded ink. Office Max. Work with us. Valid May 2nd through May 29th. Offer excludes Office Max private branded ink. Offer valid in store only. See store for details.
Hi, I'm your heart, and I gotta get something off our chest. It's about our cholesterol. And I'm not speaking just for me, because high cholesterol affects our whole body. So let's ask our doctor about garlic, okay? Garlic's clinically proven ingredient helps maintain healthy cholesterol naturally. That's why pharmacists recommend it most. And unlike other brands, you only have to take one garlic caplet a day, not five or six. Plus, it's tasteless and odor-free. So like they always say, eat right, exercise, garlic. Oh, and use as directed.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. John Simmons is here. He is president of Strategic Learning Initiatives, and his latest book is called Breaking Through, Transforming Urban School Districts. Also joining us this evening is Penny Bender Sebring. She is the founding co-director of the Consortium on School Chicago School Research. That's at the University of Chicago. And she is the lead author of The Essential Supports for School Improvement, Charting Reform in Chicago. And we thank you very much for joining us this evening. And also with us this evening is Deborah Lynch. She is a longtime union activist. She's a high school teacher. She teaches social studies and has for many, many years. And she is challenging to be the new president of the Chicago Teachers Union, a job that she once upon a time had. And she wants to come back. And we're going to take calls in just a moment. But I want to get an assessment from John and also from Penny. You were... you kind of excoriated Arne Duncan rather significantly in the last hour. John, do you share her concern that that Arne Duncan, because of his lack of experience in the classroom, may not be the right guy to envision some of these innovative ideas that you and Penny have been sharing with us tonight?
Well, I look at Arne Duncan's responsibilities in a way that uses the data from almost 15 years of school reform work paid for by the U.S. Congress. And what Congress had hoped was that the money that they put out under the Elementary and Secondary School Education Act, or now known as No Child Left Behind, would really have a major effect on changing schools. What they found was that districts would agree to do X, Y, and Z, but they often didn't implement it very effectively. So looking at that data, that where they got the money, didn't use it very well, they're now saying, we've got some additional money now in this going forward.
But what about my question? Does Arne Duncan, I mean, Deborah's made a very significant charge here. Does Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, have the capacity to implement the type of reform that you have been talking about here this evening? She's saying he doesn't.
In the job of Secretary of Education, he absolutely has the capacity. He also has the ability to look at the data. When he got our most recent results in August last summer, he actually called me on the telephone and said, John, these are great results. Keep up the work. And he's been in our building several times. He knows exactly what we're doing.
So, Penny, what do you think about his ability to get it done?
Well, when Arne was here, we at the University of Chicago had a very, very good relationship with him. He was very interested in the research and in the evidence. So I think he is one who will pay attention to those things. And that in and of itself is important.
Deborah, you agree with that?
Well, I'd like to make a comment. You mentioned before the break, the school safety and security issue. We saw at Finger High School this year the death of a student. And that was a school that Arne Duncan turned around on his way out to Washington, D.C., meaning that because of their test scores, and again, a struggling high-poverty
this was
area.
This was the beating death.
The beating death last
people
fall.
People saw repeatedly
right.
on television.
Right.
And there have been over 200 students shot in Chicago Public Schools this year.
It was one of the schools he turned around, displaced everyone in there, including the lunchroom ladies and the engineers, and rehired only 7 out of 100 teachers. So this fall, in this new model of reform, 93 brand-new teachers in the building, 3 weeks into the school year, that horrible death happened, and no adult, only 7 adults out of 100 teachers knew those kids for more than 3 weeks. Just criminal. Now we're finding out that 400 of the kids that started at that school in the fall are now gone. That is Arne Duncan's model of school reform. He endangered children. He displaced almost 100 teachers and staff, again, for the crime of dedicating themselves to a struggling, tough community, and replaced them with primarily young teachers, inexperienced teachers, and people who did not have any history in that school. So unlike at my school or other schools where we know our kids and we find out if something is coming down, we might be able to alert the police, get extra police support outside a building, and our Board of Ed doesn't even fund our security in our regular schools either.
Let's go to Frank in Pano, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
I'd like to speak on the subject of discipline. If a teacher actually disciplined a student in class, that teacher, when he left the classroom and left the school for the day, might walk outside and find that he had a brick through his windshield, or he had the antennas or the tires fly flat. That was one aspect. Now, with homework assignments, there were homework assignments given out, and when the students would show up the next day, you would ask them for their assignment. They said, we threw our books in the garbage. And I could go on and on. There were fights, constant fighting in the halls. And
Frank, what is your solution? You've painted a horrible picture. What's your solution? How do we make things better?
Well, I'm at a loss. I'm really at a loss because constitutionally, according to the Constitution, we couldn't run them into a Marine Corps basic training program. But it's all about discipline. Just plain, it boils down to
John,
discipline.
All right, I want to get John and Penny to comment on the issue of discipline and school safety, which should be a basic thing. Certainly school safety should be one of the basics that the country should be able to provide any student who wants to go to school with basic safety. Have you addressed that?
It's not a key part of our program because it's the principals and local school councils and central offices' responsibility. But we know that security is crucial, and when teachers go participate in the training that they get with us, they can very quickly improve the classroom discipline that is needed.
Take your professional hat off and put your taxpayer hat on. What's your answer to the question? How would you go about reducing the amount of crime outside Chicago public schools, which seems to be, you know, 3 out of 4 nights someone is getting shot outside of a Chicago public school? What would you do with that?
Well,
how do you do that?
The current superintendent, I think, has an extremely good approach to trying to bring the community in, the schools in. Ron Huberman has an excellent program, and he has a significant background
Which is part of your parent community ties. That's what you need.
Exactly. And he's building on those parent community ties. It's an excellent strategy, and it's probably going to have significant impact. He needs time to implement it.
Penny.
Well, one thing we've found over the years in our studies is how important the relationships are between teachers and students. And we find that when there's an incident, it's really important that the adults interact with the students and try to work on the problem rather than just calling. You may need to call the police, and if you need to. But the relationship that teachers have with their students really can make a difference in just the climate of the school, and it makes a difference in their performance as well.
Deborah, what can be done that isn't being done to address the issue of basic security in a classroom and when you walk outside the school every day?
Well, again, we're talking about resources. Our Board of Education gives our high schools, our schools, one security guard for every 400 kids. I'm at Gage Park High School in Chicago, 1,600 kids. 4 security guards are supposed to help our teachers and staff and students feel safe. So instead, the schools have to use their own local money, and instead of buying more teachers, lowering class size, doing other things that deliver education to students, they have to use their own classroom money to supplement security staff so that we at least have enough personnel. That is not good enough, and in our budget crisis, that's being cut as well.
Let's go to Kent in Geneva, Illinois on WLS. You're on the air.
Hello there, Bruce.
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Thank you for getting in my call. With all due respect to the teachers' union former president there, you know, more money is not going to solve this problem. I live in the collar counties. I live in Kane County, and I'm a daughter in a private school. I'm actually a trustee on a school board, and our cost to educate is about $7,500 per student. We have 15 students per class. My daughter last year, she's no genius, all right? But she, on a Stanford Achievement Test, she tested post-high school on 8 out of 16 topics, right? And that's indicative of the entire school, right? So I question, and the Mrs. Lynch, I believe, is her name.
Yes.
She was a former teachers union president. She was the one that came up with the quote a couple of years ago when they negotiated the last contract about, you know, we came in for a piece of the pie and we got the whole pig, I believe. I think there was some quote, you know, similar to what she said. No, it's not a, you know, it's not about the children. It's about the money. My teachers make $32,000 a year, and they produce better results than you do in any public school, Chicago public schools or otherwise.
Let's let her respond.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. You mentioned your daughter's in a class size of 15. I'm sure she has incredible parental support because you sound like a very concerned parent. And class sizes of 15 are going to make an incredible difference. The thing is, you've got to target the resources properly so that the kids in our poorest schools or our poorest kids get the support, get those kinds of class sizes, get the kind of experience that your daughter gets with loving parents at home and the support that she gets. Many of our kids come to school and they don't have those kind of supports. We're compensating for that.
Back shortly.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
Okay, emergency. This is Michelle.
Hi, I need an ambulance. I can't read.
I'll contact the local 911 center.
Just push the OnStar emergency button, and a specially trained advisor can send help to your exact GPS location.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. If you have a subscriber that's having chest pains, possible heart problems.
Ma'am, are you by yourself?
I have my kid with me.
Any difficulty breathing?
Yes.
We do have help on the way.
Mommy's going to see my kid. It's okay.
We're going to get your mommy the help that she needs, okay?
If I can. Okay. I hear sirens. Oh, love you too. We can see the ambulance.
Terrific, terrific. You are great help for your mom.
OnStar, we're here. Guys, we're going to take care of your mom.
Okay.
Emergency services is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Around the country, once upon a time, the Secretary of Education described Chicago as the worst public school system in the United States. So that was Bill Bennett during the Bush administration. It was also said for many, many years, it was believed, at least the popular perception, that one of the other schools that wasn't doing very well at the urban level was Oakland, California. Joining us now from Oakland is Steve Jubb, and he is now with an organization called Pivot Learning Partners, where he is Director for Innovation and District Redesign. But prior to that, he spent some time in the Bay Area Coalition for Equitable Schools and is generally regarded as having made significant contributions to sort of turning around that system. Steve, what was the magic thing you did in Oakland that perhaps others could replicate?
Well, I think it's a lot like what John was saying earlier. We started not with trying to make all the big system changes. We actually started with parents and kids and community members and did a lot of listening to find out what people wanted out of their schools and what we thought we could do about it.
And what did they say they wanted out of their schools?
Well, the thing that surprises a lot of people, because they often drive by schools or hear stories of parents that don't care, but what we heard overwhelmingly was that parents wanted an end to overcrowding, and that was the problem when we started this initiative. They cared deeply about the quality of their schools. They wanted to see their schools look better. They wanted to see their schools be safer. And they wanted their kids to have real opportunities at the end of the line. Even parents that had trouble supporting their own children still valued education and wanted to make sure that their kids had a better chance than they had.
How did you go about improving the safety of the schools? Can you provide any specificity?
Well, I can, because it's it turns out that the thing that makes schools safer is to ensure that that you erase anonymity, that kids are known well, and that there's connections between families and schools. And of course, we did that by making schools smaller. But more than making the schools smaller, we went through a new school process that brought families and community members and teachers together to essentially redesign their schools to a better set of specifications.
I have said on many years in the history of doing this program, I have suggested that schools being an incredible investment in property maybe could be wisely used more than just the regular, 9 to 3, and that a school really could be a beacon, maybe open 18 hours a day. The physical use of the facilities, did they change at all in Oakland, and is that part of this building of community that I think we've heard talked about this evening?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we need to look more broadly at both the assets the school has and their broader application to the community on the one hand, and then the assets the community has and their broader application to the process of helping young people be educated. I mean, the fact of the matter is the more densely connected the people are, the safer the children will be.
And in Oakland, what was the greatest challenge in a school system that, at least again perception wise, was a minority system and primarily a poor system? Would you agree with that, at least perception of what Oakland was, and has it changed in any way?
Well, I think I know the perception of Oakland has always been rather poor. I mean, if anybody needed an image makeover, it was Oakland. But for the people who live here and know it, Oakland is actually a very rich and dynamic place. And I think people felt frustrated that their school system wasn't better. But part of the problem was the evolution of the system over time just did not respond to changes in the environment here. And consequently, we had a system of haves who lived in the hillsides and have-nots that lived in the so-called flatlands, which were mostly poor families of color and immigrant families in overcrowded schools.
In the short amount of time that we have left, I'm going to ask, I could have asked this question at the beginning of the program, but people who are listening to this program or have listened to the program for the last couple of hours may say, one of the things that's wrong with education in the United States is there's too much study of it. It seems to me that there's so many different groups and reform groups. I mean, millions and hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent studying the system. As someone who is always under the microscope, Deborah, being a teacher and being a union, that's two strikes against you to at least a lot of people listening to the show this evening. Could it be that maybe there's been too much duplication of effort by well-intentioned groups?
Well, I think there's been too much of a mindset that we do the reforms to the people in the schools. Outside groups, private groups, too much money that should be going into classrooms is going to private organizations, outsourcing different things. Let's get good people in our classroom, and then let's trust them to do the right thing.
Penny, your response to the same question.
Bruce, I think there has not been enough of the right kind of research. And we've always been dedicated to interacting very extensively with the school system, with the teachers, with the community, and we've learned what the problems are and then started to develop research to address that. And that's what we need.
We got 10 seconds.
So my suggestion is apply the research. You'll see amazing results if you apply it and monitor it.
Use the existing research. That was John Simmons. He is president of Strategic Learning Initiatives. He has actually applied the research. That has been provided by Penny Bender Sebring, and she is with the Consortium on Chicago School Research. It's there. It's to be used. if you want to do it. Deborah Lynch, she is a classroom teacher and running for president of the Chicago Teachers Union. Also, our thanks to Steve Jubb, who joined us from Oakland. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. And our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for the assistance of this program. Thank you very much for joining us. Happy Mother's Day, and we will see you next week. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've helped police locate 49,000 stolen vehicles.
OnStar Center, this is Charles. How may I help you?
I just went outside to get my vehicle and it's gone.
I want to do all I can to help you. Have you contacted the police?
Yeah, the file number is 2009.
If your car is stolen, OnStar can use GPS technology to help the police recover it.
Police Department.
This is Charles with OnStar. I'm calling to verify a stolen vehicle. I have located the vehicle just south of 60th Street and Park Crescent. It is stationary.
Okay, we'll get units out, and we'll let the owner know when we find his car.
Stolen vehicle assistance is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models.
Hello.
Hi, this is Charles with OnStar.
Hey, Charles, you did a good job. You must be part bloodhound or something.
Well, I'm glad we can resolve it for you quickly.
Well, that was good. We've got it. It doesn't look like there's any damage to it. So you take care, my friend.
You're very welcome. Thanks for being on, sir.
Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
The moment you realize clowns are kind of creepy. The moment you actually saw what your favorite radio DJ looked like. The moment your printer first ran out of ink. Heart-wrenching moments of truth. Don't let your printer run out of ink again. With the largest retail selection of ink and toner, Office Max has your ink. Get a $10 Office Max gift card when you buy $40 of national branded ink. Office Max. Work with us. Valid May 2nd through May 29th. Offer excludes Office Max private branded ink. Offer valid in store only. See store for details.
Guys, discomfort and chafing from wetness-related friction can hit any time. Get relief and prevent it too with Gold Bond Medicated Foot Powder for your feet and body powder for your, you know. Whether you're working out or just holding down the couch, you're a guy. And unlike baby powders, Gold Bond's got the medicated formulas to fight itch, odor, and wetness. Plus, it's got that cooling kick that lets you know it's working wherever. Keep it cool with Gold Bond Medicated Foot and Body Powders. It's a guy thing. Use as directed.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
What's our emergency? This is Michelle.
Hi, I need an ambulance. I can't read.
I'll contact the local 911 center.
Just push the OnStar emergency button, and a specially trained advisor can send help to your exact GPS location.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. If you have a subscriber that's having chest pains, possible heart problems.
Ma'am, are you by yourself?
I have my kid with me.
Any difficulty breathing?
Yes.
We do have help on the way.
Mommy's not feeling good. It's okay.
We're going to get your mommy the help that she needs, okay?
Yes, I can. Okay. I hear sirens.
Love you.
Oh, love you too.
We can see the ambulance.
Terrific, terrific. You are great help for your mom.
OnStar, we're here. Guys, yep. We're going to take care of your mom.
Okay.
Emergency services is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.